Hey everyone, welcome to yet another Hyperspace Broadcast minisode, an episode of the podcast where instead of delving into Toonami's old back catalog, we watch something that never was shown on Toonami but is vaguely related to what we've been watching. This week, we took on the Fist of the North Star movie, distributed by who else? Streamline Pictures. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this is an interesting movie.
That's a way to put it.
Right. I saw it personally for the first time about like almost 2 years ago at this point, which is kind of crazy. Around the time we were recording our Robotech coverage.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I live in Los Angeles, so I went to the New Beverly Theater, which is run by Quentin Tarantino, and they had a like screening of this movie, and I went to it thinking that it was going to be the live action movie, which also exists, but instead it was this, and I had no idea what to expect. And then Carl Masick's name came up on the screen.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, oh boy. And then I was treated to a roughly 2 hour long, crazy, gory kind of mess of a movie, frankly.
Very 80s, cheesy, gory, insane, post-apocalyptic Bruce Lee.
Yeah, right. So
those are the key words for this film.
Exactly. Those are the search terms?
Search
engine
SEO
optimization for you? Yeah. So this movie was produced in 1986 by Toei, based on the 1984 manga written by Buranson, which is Yoshiyuki Okamura, and illustrated by Tetsuo Hara. The version we watched was the Streamline Pictures dub, as I already said, released to home video in 1991. This is not a direct adaptation of the first arc of the manga, but rather like a reimagining of the first arc, and also the dub isn't a direct translation of that reimagining, so we have several layers of adaptation here.
Yeah.
Which I'll say right off the bat makes the film sometimes confusing, and I'm not sure who is to blame for that exactly.
Yeah, it's not super easy to follow, and there's not really a lot of backstory given.
Yeah, right. And the real
a lot of random and strange things, like all these martial arts schools and how they work.
Yeah, right.
What this crazy martial arts style where you punch people and they explode.
Like, yeah, okay. Very gruesomely and gorily.
Really gory. This movie's very gory.
It is probably one of the I think it's the goriest animated movie I've ever seen. Like, I don't think anything else I've seen comes close to this in terms of sheer level of amount of blood on screen and seeing people's heads explode, which, good lord, do people's fucking heads explode in this movie.
Yeah.
Like...
The main character's like primary move is to punch someone in such a way as to like hit acupressure points perfectly that causes their head to like not just explode but like start to like erupt and like
it's like you're overfilling a water balloon kind of.
Yeah. And then
but
it just pops.
It's full of blood.
You see eyes fly out and like teeth and shit. And it's like fuck it, whatever. Yeah, fine. We're going that over the top.
Yeah. So in 1990X, because, you know, that's a thing that always baffles me. Like
that, I believe that means this takes place before Mega Man X.
Possibly.
So this might be a prequel.
Yeah, but it's always, that's always been a weird thing to me. And like, it's not a new thing either. I mean, I had a H.G. Wells like compilation book, and all of his dates were like, you know, 18XX basically.
Okay.
So it's a long running trend, but it's just I don't get it, honestly. Like, I'm not sure why you can't just place a fucking date for your fictional event.
It's as if they're like trying to protect the anonymity of the year.
Yeah, like, exactly.
We don't want you to know exactly when this happens. It'd be too embarrassing for 1993. Oh, shit, we said it.
or it's like, well, you know, It's like numerology. It's like, well, technically, yeah. If we say 1990X, then each year that it doesn't happen, we can just say, well, maybe next year.
Must have been, yeah, maybe next year.
Maybe next year the nuclear bombs will fall and everyone will fucking die,
yeah.
Which is pretty much how this starts. But before that, we're treated to a speechifying narrator talking about yin and yang, and like good and evil and a balance of power throughout the universe before he comes around to, but on Earth, this balance was disrupted when the whole planet was plunged into nuclear war. This opening narration is never referred to again. And it sort of relates to the theme of the movie, I guess, but it feels so separate from everything else that it's just a very strange way to open such a movie.
And it's crazy to me because the film starts on like these peaceful, happy shots of
The opening
pre-destroyed
credits.
Landscape. And I thought for sure it was going to pull like a, oh, fuck you. You thought this was going to be fun? Like, and just show the nukes drop on these like happy families and this nice, fun landscape with beautiful music. And they don't do that. Which was good. I don't like that kind of surprise.
I mean, to be fair, they do cut to like a man's face melting due to the explosion of a bomb.
it's like a separate scene from that. Like, they show the bombs going off on Earth. Like, they show like a shot of Earth and like all these explosions
from
happening
space,
all over
right.
it. Like, it's the end of Chrono Trigger or something. And then they zoom back in on, yes, human beings like fucking melting and their eyeballs flying out. But yeah, I just, it's interesting too, because it's like, I don't exactly recall, this movie's a lot and it's long and there's a lot to remember. Mm-hmm. And I don't exactly remember this boring pre-gory part.
Right.
But did we see Kenshiro, the main character, before the bombs dropped?
No. Definitely not.
Okay.
It's just landscapes. So that's one of the things that I question, and maybe this is a minor point, but it's not very clear how long after said nuclear war the events of this movie take place. It's sort of implied that the people in it were alive before the war, which is fine, but it's just kind of strange. Like, you know, it's not like there are flashbacks to pre-war stuff ever or anything like that. It all seems to be in an equally devastated environment.
And it's basically the plot of this is like nukes fall and bodybuilders take over the world. Like, these guys, every character who isn't a woman or like an occasional weak civilian.
Yeah, right.
Which is like 99% of the characters are so ripped, so huge, so swollen and weird. They look like action figures whose steroids are on steroids. Like, it's, they're fucking insane looking.
Yeah, and the character design in this in general.
It's pretty bad, but it pretty much dehumanizes them. So like, when you see, to me, when I see the horrible villains get punched and explode horrifyingly, I just like, yeah, okay. It's like, it doesn't bother me. When it's like civilians, it's a bit more disturbing.
This is a world where the strong rule over the weak, the physically strong, that is.
Yeah,
and
martial artists rule over the physically strong.
Yeah, exactly. It's Mad Max without guns or cars, but with punching.
That's right.
And our
buggies.
Hero is Kenshiro, or Ken, as he's called in this, who is the successor to the assassination art of Hokuto Shinken, which uses people's pressure points to cause them to explode. Now, that is not mentioned in the movie. So he is just the Fist of the North Star, quote unquote, and he makes people explode. The beginning of the movie is he and his fiance Julia just kind of walking through the wasteland when they're confronted by Shin, who is a blonde sort of pretty boy, but also, you know, absurdly muscular and action
figure-like.
Pretty
giant mullet man.
Who decides to steal Julia because I guess there's no one to stop him and he's strong, and he horribly scars Ken, giving him
seven
scars on his chest.
Like, scars by just poking him with his finger.
poking in a weird his scene. Finger through him like he's made out of clay, as you said.
It's really weird and gross.
And there's also like this weird filter effect over the gorier scenes.
Yeah.
This included where it's like shuddering kind of, and there's usually some kind of color filter on it too, which is really strange.
Maybe a little blurred, but not that much. Like, you still see a lot of gore.
Right.
And we found out later that this is a censorship thing that they added on after the original airing in Japan.
Yeah, right.
And apparently there is no cut that exists that has like the uncensored cut. Like the original reel probably got destroyed in the censorship.
Yeah, possibly. Or possibly. At any rate, it hasn't been released in any form for whatever reason. So essentially the rest of this movie is, to put it simply, Ken going around killing people who sort of betrayed him.
He pretty much just kills evil bandits.
Well, yeah, but also the evil bandits happen to be people who betrayed him, sort of. Like, I mean,
I feel like most of the time it's not. Like, just, I guess you're right. Like, they're led by these warlords, and the warlords happen to also be martial artists, because martial artists are the top of the top.
Yeah, who trained in the same school that Ken did, and are his brothers, as they're referred to, you know, again, kind of vaguely implying that they are actually siblings, not like... you know, that they trained together.
It's a martial arts term, though.
Yeah, right. So from Ken being beaten, we see his brothers, quote unquote, Rao and Chagi, who are, you know, also super strong practitioners of the same martial art. Chagi throws Ken down a crevasse because he's not dead enough yet. And Rao goes to their, I guess, dojo and demands that he be named Fist of the North Star, which the master refuses because he has no perspective. Rao demonstrates how awesome he is by crushing gigantic statue heads under his biceps.
Yeah, these giant statue heads that are as big as his whole body, pretty much.
Right.
But he just wields two of them with both of his arms.
And then he, you know, goes out and has some crazy, like, trippy experience on a mountain peak sort of thing with some pretty interesting visual effects, frankly. But, like, I assume it's, like, video stuff. I don't know. It's interesting. It looks almost CG, but it's kind of too early for that. So then we are cut to a kid named Bat, who is driving a dune buggy being chased by a bunch of motorcycle bandits. And he's with a mute girl named Lynn. They are chased around through a destroyed city.
In a scene that was like evocative of the Burger King Kids Club. Like, just seeing them in this stupid buggy, which I assume they had.
I'm sure
the Kids Club
had some kind of vehicle.
They've both got like goggles on. You know, they got to have something blocking their eyes because it's cool. And they're like fleeing these stupid, like, at this point it's just like all of this is action figures. This is an action figure commercial. The goriest action figure commercial ever made.
Yeah, so they like, crap, well, go on.
Well, this little buggy chase is minor but pretty funny in that they're
not
driving the buggy
at all. What?
They drive the buggy and like go through a building, a part where most action movies would be like, okay, the motorcycle guys stop chasing him because, you know, they just did something crazy. It's too crazy. I can't risk my life.
Yeah, right.
They don't even bat an eye.
Yeah.
And the motorcyclists like all ride their bikes in the building and like up the stairs and shit, following them around and just doing the same crazy shit as they do.
Yeah, no matter what Bat does, they're always right on his tail.
Yeah.
And it just never, like, it just goes on and on. Until Bat eventually crashes. So after they crash, the motorcycle bandits finally actually, like, catch up to them, decide to, I guess, just crush Lynn like a bug for some reason.
Attempt to.
Yeah, right. And then who comes out of the wilderness but a rock man?
Yeah. I'm so surprised that a rock lord was in this movie. It's just like stone golem of a man just starts walking through and it's like, wait, what?
Yeah, and he starts punching buildings, causing them to collapse. One collapses on top of him and he just kind of, you know, like it collapses such that he is partly embedded in the building, but still keeps walking forward through it. Yeah. Like it's made out of, I don't know, paper mache.
Breaks off onto him.
Yeah, and then it breaks over his head. The rock all kind of falls away, and it's revealed to be Kenshiro, now with a beard and with some kind of robe. And this is where he first demonstrates his awesome ability to make people's heads explode, which... Now, let me say something about people's heads exploding in this movie. We're going to talk about it a lot, but it is crazy the first time you see it.
Yeah.
It's gross and nuts. But by the fifth time, it's kind of just like, all right, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for what is ostensibly a, like, martial arts action movie kind of thing, there is not that great of a variety of ways that people dispatch their enemies in this movie. It's
That's
pretty much
true.
Ken causing people's heads to explode, which kind of looks the same.
Or other body parts. He'll explode them in unique ways. If they're really, really big, then, like, half your top half will blow up and girl will just fly everywhere. Right? You know, he has the explodey moves. You've got his friend who he befriends, Ray, who has like more claw based moves where he cuts them into like slices of meat. It's to the point, at one point he cuts like two dudes at once and like the slices of one dude land on the bottom slices of the other dude.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like,
ridiculous. But I want to highlight the scene where Ken saves these two kids, because after he saves them, they like give him, you know, a place to sleep basically. And then another group of bandits shows up and starts demanding, you know, food or whatever. And Ken wakes up and gets up from like the table or whatever he's sitting on so hard that it explodes under
Like, and then he opens the door so hard that the door explodes. It's just like, that was maybe the funniest part of the movie.
Yeah, no, by far. It's amazing.
It's not played
how ridiculous
as a joke.
It is. Yeah, exactly. It's totally serious. That he's so
he
strong
sits
that,
up and it explodes.
That his bed explodes, which must be a fucking problem, frankly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Can you imagine living the life where every time you get out of bed, it fucking explodes and you have
Especially
to buy
in the
a new one?
Post-apocalypse. Those are
yeah,
hard
exactly.
to come by.
I guess he just sleeps on the ground and just like dirt explodes away from him when he wakes up. But anyway, we're then introduced to Ray, who is searching for his kidnapped sister. And eventually he and Ken meet up and find that the person they're searching for is the same man. This, of course, is Chagi, the guy who threw Ken down a crevasse, who has scarred himself and is now pretending to be Ken for some reason, I guess to give Ken a bad name. Chagi wears a big mask. They go to confront him, find out that Ray's sister is there. Ken beats Chagi in a fight on top of a skyscraper, which they get to somewhat randomly. And also Chagi, for some reason, decides to reveal that he was the one who told Shin that he should totally kill Ken and steal his girl. Again,
right.
Like, why?
In,
I don't know.
Probably the dumbest scene in the movie. In a movie that's very dumb. In which we just get this whole shot of him like being the sneaky man, like trying to just like going like to his side and be like, hey, I think he's like not... dude, he's totally like not good enough for you.
Yeah,
not
she's good totally Julia. Into you, Shin.
She wants
totally.
You, man.
And it's like he's
so
like literally
stupid.
Like grabbing onto him, and it's so ridiculous how cartoonish it is. It's hilarious. So Chagi dead, we are now going after Shin, who has Julia basically in the, you know, lap of luxury, but she doesn't like it because she's not in love with him, which makes sense because he fucking kidnapped her. And that, you know, she finds out that Ken may still be alive. So she escapes and finds herself captured by Rao. Now, Rao, in the meantime, has been leading a giant army of like BDSM ninjas and a man in a Viking helmet who is gigantic and is riding around in the back of a big car.
Who we found is voiced by James Avery.
Well, they fight a guy voiced by James Avery can change his skin into steel in a scene that is kind of awesome, but also sort of pointless. Like, it's just Rao thrashing the shit out of another army unrelated to everything else, sort of.
The steel guy kicks ass first, and then he gets his ass beat. And he, like, fucks by up Rao the other guy's specifically. Army pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's voiced by James Avery, Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I was so thrilled to find that out.
Yes, exactly. As that you exclaimed, wait, Uncle fantastic. Phil was in this?
Oh, God.
Yeah, and this is where things start to get kind of confusing, as though they weren't already, because Ken goes off to find Shin. In his big city known as Southern Cross, he finds Shin, but Shin's already been grievously wounded. They have a very brief fight, and then Shin dies. Meanwhile, Ray, Bat, and Lin, who I probably should have mentioned, Ken unmuted, you know? Now she can talk again. Because
martial arts magic.
Ken's fucking god, I guess.
Yeah.
And they decide to go to Rao's city, Cassandra, for some reason. I'm not sure why. Also, Ray's sister, gone. She
she
is in about three scenes.
And then they saved her, and then she vanished, and Ray still hung out with them. So
yeah, and she's never mentioned again either. She's just gone suddenly. But who cares? Whatever. Because now we got Rao mega crucifying Julia, putting her up on a giant cross.
The tallest cross you've ever seen.
In order to lure out Ken. But Ken's not there because he's busy walking between Southern Cross and Cassandra.
Slowly.
Very slowly.
Yeah. So instead you get Ray challenging him to a fight and getting his ass beat and dying.
Yeah, right. Ray gets beaten by Rao. Ken shows up. We have the final showdown between Ken and Rao. And they fight. Yeah. The fights in this movie, for the most part, are people punching each other. At this point, they are just kind of flying through the air, like,
this
shooting electricity at each other.
It's a bad DBZ fight.
It's crazy. Rao is flying through the air on a fucking horse. And the horse, you know, it...
That's true. I forgot that happens.
And it's not even
he levitates with his horse.
Yeah, and it's not even like the horse is flying. It's like they poochied it, and they're just moving the cell around in the air. Like, the horse looks like it's just standing there, but it's flying around. And, you know, I guess Ken gets beaten, and he's knocked unconscious. So Rao's about to finish him off. But wait, here comes Lin, the little girl. And she basically asks Rao to spare Ken's life, and Rao's just kind of like, yeah, all right. Then he fucking leaves.
Yeah. And, you know, somehow that proves it's like, I don't know, the innocence of children or something. Who gives a shit?
Yeah,
it was stupid.
I legit don't understand still, like, what exactly this was supposed to convey, and I suspect that this is likely a problem with the translation, or at the very least a problem with the adaptation, because reading the summary of the manga on Wikipedia, it sounded much more motivated.
Maybe it's just not good.
I mean, that's also possible.
A lot of people are big fans of this series and stuff, though, and it's got a lot of history.
But
it must mean it's good.
Yeah, right. It's again, though, quite funny that this is, again, literally, it's just this little girl saying, "Hey, please don't do this." He's like, "All right, I guess I won't," and then he fucking walks off.
Yeah.
And then we have a shot of Lin looking down at Ken, who's just lying face down in the dirt. And then it cuts to her and Bat walking away. And they're like, man, I wonder what happened to Ken. You just fucking
died.
Left him.
He looked like he was dead.
They see some flowers, which is, you know, a sign of hope for the future. And then we cut to Ken walking through the desert, and he finds a big area with a lot of trees. And he says, "Julia," and then the movie's over.
All right.
Quite an ending.
Yeah.
And
the ending kind of sucked.
Yes. I remembered while watching it this time, I was like, oh, yeah, the ending of this did not make any sense to me. Like, it comes out of nowhere.
The voice work. So So that's the movie, and we're going a little long for many, so, but there's a couple things we have to touch on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
The voice work in this is, it's not great. It's like
It's
very cheesy 80s, and it's kind of fun in that way. It's a lot of Robotech voice actors as the lead roles.
A couple of them, yeah. Roy Fokker's in there, and so is Rick Hunter.
My favorite is they include swear words and stuff. It's like very like 80s swear words your dad would say, like calling someone a lard ass.
Yeah, right.
Something like that really tickles me.
The deployment of Ken's apparent catchphrase, "You're already dead," is always kind of stuck in the middle of a sentence in a way that makes it sound not cool.
It makes it sound sarcastic and not cool. It's not. It's usually he just like announces it like in a cool way and does the move. And in this, it's just like, what does he say? What is the line he says to the fat guy?
Say your prayers, lard ass, because you're already dead. And then, you know, the fat guy explodes. It's like, fucking, okay, cool.
Oh, my God.
There is a scene that we've probably talked about on the podcast before where Ray cuts off somebody guy's arms, then tosses the arms back to the now armless guy after saying, hey, these belong to you, and then proceeds to call him an asswipe.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is again a thing that no one says anymore. And the thing is with this movie, like I was trying to think today, what are the things about it that make it seem so just inconsistent and like choppy? Because you know that's the best way I can describe it. It feels choppy.
Yeah,
like there's stuff like Ray's sister just disappearing from the film.
Some rough edges here.
Yeah, right. And then I think part of it is that all of the environments look pretty much identical. Like everything is just a ruined city. And there isn't even that much difference between the ruined cities. Like all the bad guys' lairs are kind of just identical. And so as a result, like time and space have no meaning.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, Southern Cross and Cassandra could be thousands of miles away, but they look identical. They could also be down the street from each other. Like, who knows? Similarly, you know, when time is supposed to have passed, it's impossible to tell because everything looks exactly the same. So,
Did we ever see nighttime in this movie? Like, I think one scene at night.
There's probably a couple in there. But, like, you know, the best example I can think of is the scene where, you know, Lynn looks down at Ken, who is face down in the dirt, apparently dead. And then the very next scene is her and Bat just walking somewhere.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, but it's the kind of thing where it's like, well, okay, some time is probably meant to have passed by now. But how am I supposed to know that? Like, they could easily be down the street from where they just were. It's just another wrecked road. It all looks identical. Yeah, it's not night absolutely. Or anything. they haven't grown up.
It for sure looks like a block away. Like
right.
Which is so ridiculous considering the line, like, I wonder what happened to Ken. It's like, it looks like you were just with him. Like,
just left him to die.
Yeah.
Like, so that's one thing. And then another thing, frankly, is just that this is an adaptation of a pretty long-running manga. And even if it is only the first, like, arc, you know, it runs into that problem of, oh shit, we have to include a ton of very specific stuff. And as a result, if you're not familiar with the source material already, there's just going to be shit that makes no sense. Like when Ray is first introduced, he's disguised as a woman for some reason. That never comes up again or is ever explained whatsoever. Yeah. It's just, you know, he's disguised as a woman. And then the dude whose arms he chops off is like, what? I thought you were a girl. And then he gets killed. And that's it. Like, why? Who cares? Why did Ray leave his village, you know, and cause, I mean, you know, his sister gets kidnapped when he's away. Why the fuck in this world would you leave your village?
Yeah.
You have to defend it. I don't know. It's just like weird, inconsistent stuff like that, where I feel like there's more to it, but just not time for the movie to include it.
Yeah, sure. And this is like so clearly something made and directed towards young boys, even though it's so ludicrously gory.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's crazy to me, is seeing that this was serialized originally in Shonen Jump.
Yeah,
and I was like,
alongside like Dr. Slump and Captain Tsubasa, you have this.
Because it's, again, it's hard to overstate how gross it is. Like, it's just people's heads exploding like pieces of overripe fruit.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
And, yeah, and all the plot motivations are so, like, juvenile and, like,
yeah,
kind of boyish
much.
And of the 80s, where it's like, he took his girlfriend, kidnapped. Yeah,
it's basically the same plot as Double Dragon.
Yeah, it really is.
Some dude beats you up, takes your girl, and then you just gotta fight your way through an endless army of guys to get her back, I guess.
If you thought there might be, like, any female character of any kind of strength, no.
Not really.
Absolutely not.
No. Julia, I mean, you know, there's like Guile, but it's not like any of them fight or even really exist much, frankly.
Yeah.
They're just a piece to be moved around so that the hero has something to go after.
It's really stupid. This movie, I would say overall, like in terms of how I feel about it, it was fun and worth watching, but not all of it. It goes on too long.
It is too long. I would say that this is a movie that you should not watch. But if you are of a mind like us where you laugh at totally goofy things, like this is definitely a so bad it's good kind of movie, particularly the streamlined dub. You know, I can't speak to the original, you know, voice acting.
Sure.
Who knows? I suspect that it's not much better, frankly.
The streamlined dub lends to the so bad it's good aspect.
Yeah, because it's
so
goofy.
Still fucking insane and stupid. Like, even subtracting that part. This is a good movie to, like, put on with friends who don't get queasy at gore and
have some
laugh
beers.
Have some beers, laugh at.
It's on Amazon Prime.
And yeah, for free. And if you have Amazon Prime. And just watch it until you're bored of it. Like, don't feel bad about turning it off. Because it's not worth it to get to the end.
Yeah, no, the end is very just anticlimactic, kind of. I don't know. It just kind of happens, and then it's over.
Yeah, you pretty much want to get to the point where, like, what, he gets up from the bed and the bed explodes, and then the
well, you
the nunchuck
see also,
rip arm goff.
That's
guy.
Great.
The ass
I mean, there's
scene.
Some stuff later on that's also pretty funny. Like, I don't know, when he kills Choggy, and he just says, Choggy, damn.
After horribly murdering
funny
him.
To me. but... Yeah, it is certainly not a movie that you're going to want to sit down and watch because it's great, because it is not.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we watched it, because I laughed quite hard at it again.
Yeah,
it's
pretty
hilarious.
Funny.
It's insane.
The bed exploding just kills me.
Yeah, no, again,
I love it
that,
so much.
That is the funniest thing ever. And
it's not even that he gets
it
up.
It seems to be dead serious.
He doesn't get up so hard that it explodes. It's just like he gets up. He does get up fairly quickly, but
he sits up because he hears someone in danger, kind of.
There's no impact to it, though. He just gets up and it explodes.
You know, here's the thing that I realized while I was writing the summary for this movie. This movie is kind of like if you followed a slasher villain as the hero of a movie.
Yeah.
Like, Ken kind of just goes around messily executing
people who
have no chance against him.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, and, you know, he hears the sound of someone in danger, and it instantly wakes him up, much like Jason and Jason X, who hears teens having sex on a spaceship and comes back to life.
I would love to see Jason versus Kenshiro.
That might be interesting. Yeah, of course, he'd just like, punch him a bunch, and then Jason's head would explode.
Even if Jason kept coming back, it's like, who cares?
Just keep exploding your head, bud.
You can't really beat Kenshiro, can you?
I don't know. Rao beat him, I guess. But, you know, Rao also just did similarly weird things that caused Ken to, like, spurt lines of blood out of his body.
When Uncle Phil punches Rao, like, he doesn't even approach him. Rao just... It stands there, does literally nothing, and he, like, takes damage and dies.
Wait, I think you're getting that mixed up, because Rao's the one who punches Uncle Phil Metal Man.
That's right.
Like, through several mountains. Like, you thought Dragon Ball Z, someone getting punched through a mountain was crazy? This dude flies through, like, three fucking mountains.
Yeah.
And Rao doesn't even actually touch him. That's how strong he is.
Yeah, it seems like he just doesn't move at all. Which is like, okay, I guess just being around this guy, his ill intent can destroy you.
I mean, this, frankly, is a movie where the characters are so powerful that when they get out of bed, the bed explodes. They can't open doors without doors exploding. And when they walk, their feet crush into the ground like they're fucking Godzilla.
With the sound of like a Gundam walking. Like, it is crushing the earth.
So if you are a fan of dumb 80s cheese kind of stuff, totally, yeah. No, watch this with a beer. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But we should probably get back to Samurai Jack.
I think we
season
should.
Season 4.
I need to see a variety of environments again. Not just the same desolate bullshit.
The same busted up buildings with a fucking ship just smashed through a skyscraper somehow.
The same basically just Fallout 3.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll get back to Samurai Jack Season 4 next week. Until then, I'm Michael Doak.
And Peter Eby.
And, check out Fist of the North Star if you're a fan of dumb, goofy 80s stuff, because boy, is it that.